Hey everyone, welcome to the Front Stretch Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Mike Neff.
How you doing?
And Neff, I'm doing well, and we're going to be doing really well after this conversation we got, because as always, a lot to talk about, including rain.
I'm still trying to dry out from this weekend, brother.
Yeah, I feel you. And so are some of the teams. I saw they had some of the equipment, like DGM Racing had all their equipment from Saturday outside today in the Florida sun drying off. So we'll talk about all that. We've also got an interview coming up at the tail end of the show with the race winner from Saturday's Xfinity race, AJ Allmendinger. And now we could really talk about the Xfinity race for, I don't know, 1, 2, 3 hours if we wanted to. Yeah, a week. but I want to talk about the Cup race first, because I'll be honest, going into Sunday's race, I thought it could be a shit show based off of Saturday's race because there was still weather in the forecast. It turned out it rained pre-race, heavily pre-race, and probably still heavily rained from the night before as there were standing, you know, puddles on the track, lake, as I think Jeff Burton called it, from Saturday. Denny Hamlin said in a Zoom call prior to the Cup race that NASCAR sent the drivers a message on Sunday morning, noting that things they would handle things differently from Saturday's race, essentially not running in puddles. It did rain pre-race. They began the race on wet tires, but ultimately everyone was on slicks by the end of the first stage. With that said, I found the first stage very entertaining.
I agree. I thought the first stage was the best part of the whole race, and primarily because of the fact that you had people on different tire strategies. You had a car or two that you don't normally see running at the front of the pack, and ultimately Ty Dillon taking the win in the stage. And it was historic. It's the first time we've seen Cup cars on rain tires, so that was amazing. And it just the dichotomy of different strategies allowed for some entertaining racing. I thought once that stage ended, the rest of the show wasn't very entertaining for my eyes. But I agree with you. I thought the first stage was cool. It was historic, and it was definitely entertaining.
Yeah, most definitely. And if the first stage doesn't go to show you the difference in tires and how we need, you know, more tire wear and tire fall off, I don't know what more to tell you. Obviously, we're not going to get 5 second fall off from what Ty Dillon was running. He was running 5 seconds a lap quicker at the end of the run than Clint Bowyer was, who was out there on wet tires still. And obviously, when the tracks, you know, heated up and not wet, those rain tires, those wet tires are going to burn very quickly, as we saw with a couple of drivers that had, you know, big old, like, marks on them, blisters almost. So, yeah, it was interesting to see Ty Dillon go through the field. He went through the field on rain tires, too. The 13 was pretty quick for a while. Second stage was pretty much regular strategy-filled road course race, and then obviously Chase Elliott rocketed to the front in the final stage, proven once again, Neff, that he is the best road racer, at least on the active, you know, schedule.
Yeah, right now in the sport, I'd agree with that. I think it also, once again, reemphasized the fact that we need to rethink how we do stages in road courses. I'm down with stages, but we just have to do away with the caution flag to end them. I think we just need to wave the green and white to let everybody know that that's the end of the stage, but we don't interrupt the racing, because I feel like there's so much strategy to road racing and so many different things that can happen. And when you have preconceived cautions, that takes away 85 or 90% of that strategy. And I really feel like I'd like to see us rethink it across the board, but I definitely think, especially with 6 road courses coming next year, that we really got to look at it for 2021 and come up with something different for how we handle the end of stages.
Totally agree. I think you and I are both traditionalists, and I mean, we haven't talked about this in a while, and I don't really want to go down this road, but stage racing, I feel like, has brought a new value to the sport. Obviously running well throughout the entire race, but when it comes to road courses, it does affect it a great deal, and I think the racing product has suffered a lot because of it too. So regardless, it doesn't matter what stage is, no stage. I think Chase Elliott is going to be the star of the show on road courses, at least for the foreseeable future. That's 4 in a row, Neff. That's very rare territory.
Oh, yeah. I was around when Jeff Gordon did it to him back in the day.
And 6.
It was, you know, as they were talking, talking about during the broadcast that, you know, when we were going to road courses back then, it was just assumed that Gordon was going to win, you know? I mean, you had Rusty Wallace that would give him a little bit of a go because in his time before Jeff was in, Rusty was really good on it, and Ricky Rudd was really good on road courses. So those two guys would battle him, and eventually Stewart got better at it, but Stewart was kind of like as Gordon's dominance kind of faded was when Stewart kind of really got his groove at it. But and as they talked about it some this weekend, back then you had four or five guys that legitimately were going to win on a road course, and everybody else was just out there putting in the time for the weekend. Now, anybody in the field, which again, as I think was emphasized by Ty Dillon, can turn around and win one of these things. They have that kind of talent, and it's just a matter of the equipment. And right now, I feel like the number 9 Hendrick car is head and shoulders above everybody, even the other cars in his own stable. I mean, I felt like Bowman and Byron had flashes, but Elliott just walked on them, and there was no challenge at all.
Yeah, both Bowman and Byron led laps, and it was interesting because post-race on the Zoom call, Alex Bowman mentioned how he, in the simulator this week, drove the 9, or I guess last week, drove the setup on the 9 car, and he just couldn't drive it. It just didn't suit his style, which I guess even goes to tout Elliott and his driving ability on road courses even that much more, because it's kind of odd how this all happened. If you think back to the Xfinity Series, and I know Chase only ran there for 2 full years, he wasn't stellar on road courses. You know, obviously he grew up racing short tracks, and you'd kind of figure that's where he would be his bread and butter. So 55.5% of his career wins have now come on road courses. And with 6 of them next year, I can only imagine he's smiling.
Oh, he's got to be thrilled. And yeah, wouldn't they say his road course winning percentage at this point is like 48% or something?
Yeah.
I mean, it's stupid already, and that's with a couple of years of not being good at it. But yeah, it was 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, he had a good run at Watkins Glen. He didn't win, but he ran really well.
17.
And it was kind of that event just was like his green light or light bulb moment that went off in his head, and was when he really kind of started to really show out on these types of road courses. And he's continuing to refine his craft and get even better, and people are going to have to do some really hard work if they're going to catch up to him anytime soon.
Sure, and he's proven he can overcome adversity too. Obviously last year in the Roval, he crashed into the heartburn turn there in turn 1. And then this year, right at the beginning of the...
And then drove through the whole field to get back and win it.
And then same thing this year with the final stage. He had a loose left front wheel. And, you know, he made his way, I think, up to like 18th, 19th on a caution flew. And then while others who hadn't pitted on the previous caution had to take more fuel, he took lesser fuel and got to the front. And then the crossover he made on Erik Jones, I think you know what I'm talking about, was for the lead.
Yeah.
That was slick, man. He just can put that car where nobody else can.
Yeah, and it was funny. They even commented on it during the broadcast that the way he exited the corners and the way he came out so much lower than everybody was, that the car was just biting that hard into the track, really seemed like like you said, he could put the car anywhere he wanted to, and I think not only that, but have the power down. I think that was the key. There were a lot of guys, Harvick especially was talking about it, that he just couldn't apply the power coming out of the two chicanes, and it was really hurting him. And Dillon just didn't seem to have, or excuse me, Elliott didn't have a problem with that at all. He was able to get as much power down as he needed to any time that he needed to. And it has shown out pretty impressively. We will, like you said, 6 of them next year. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, that was mighty impressive. And truly, I didn't think many drivers had anything for him. And I know he didn't dominate the race, really. He led a race-high 27 laps, well, equaled for race-high with William Byron. But it took, you know, once he got the lead and got control late, there was no looking back. And I think one of the cars, and maybe surprisingly to some, but he's a good road racer, Clint Boyer, I think he had a car that could contend with the 9. We never really saw him battle heads-up. because Bowyer was good at the beginning of the race. Elliott came out in the end, and then obviously in mid-race, Bowyer had a little run-in with Keselowski and Kyle Busch and drove the final, 30 laps, 40 laps with no power steering and still got a top 10. So I bring that up.
Used up.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he looked beat up after that race, getting out of the car, sitting right next to the door. But I bring that up, Neff, because obviously this was a cutoff race. And, I mean, coming in, there was a 21-point buffer to 9th and 10th from the 8th place position. So, really, I kind of thought all week you probably had to win. Or at least that's what Kyle Busch, Austin Dillon, Eric Almirola, and Bowyer had to do. Or set themselves up to do. And Bowyer, in my opinion, was the only one that even had a shot. I don't know what you think, but he was competitive for the majority of the race until he got back in traffic, and then it was on the wrong strategy call.
Yeah, I found it interesting when the time came there early in the race for the first pit stop. Or was it second pit stop?
I think it was the first.
Might have been the second pit stop in the first stage. Did we have one before the competition caution?
Yep, there was two.
I'm trying to remember.
There was two cautions right before the end of both stages. That set up for a few lap pitch.
So that was after the competition caution?
Correct.
Okay, then it was that second one. But you had the guys below the cutoff line, Almirola especially, but also Busch, that came in and pitted.
Mm-hmm.
And we were only, what was it, like 4 or 5 laps to the end of the stage?
It wasn't long.
And it struck me as odd because of the fact that they were about 20-something points back. And my thought was, if you can stay out and end up, getting a 4th or 5th place run to where you get 6 points, and then you manage to get 6 points in the second stage, you're now down to an 8-point deficit. And you never know what might happen. Somebody might have a problem. But both, especially those two guys, just kind of threw in the towel that they were going to have to try and win to advance. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed odd to me that at least one of them didn't take a shot on trying to load up on stage points to get to the next round. And obviously, at the end there, it didn't matter because Elliott was running away with him, so he didn't win it anyway. But it felt to me like there should have been an opportunity there to work on points, and nobody tried.
Kyle Busch especially, because, like I said, he entered 21 back, as did Austin Dillon. But Kyle Busch is a proven road racer, and he's won, 3 races between Watkins Glen and Sonoma? And he even had a good car if we flash back to Daytona earlier this year on the road course, until all hell went haywire there at the end, and the car broke. He broke from second. So it's not like he's been bad. Granted, there's only one other road course this year to kind of base yourself off of. But, yeah, I'm shocked he didn't. And really, the whole race, I didn't know what strategy they were doing. Adam Stevens ran him out of gas there at the end, and they knew they were going
to
run out.
And that was the other part of that that just seemed dumb to me. I understood rolling the dice, get it out front, we're going to see if we can steal this thing on some old tires and make fuel last. But once he lost the lead and he's running like 5th or 6th and the caution comes out with, it was going to be the last run was like 16 green flag laps, 15 laps, something like that. Why do you not pit? I mean, you're not winning because you obviously just got passed by 5 cars.
Mm-hmm.
You're borderline on fuel. Why not take a chance on getting some fresh tires and see if you can run up through there and make something happen? It was just such an absolute, like, let's roll the dice and see if we can totally get lucky on other people's demise. I mean, it was, you always envision Kyle Busch like grabbing the bull by the horns and just going and taking what he wants. And this totally felt like they were absolutely banking on other people having trouble in order for them to advance. And it seems so out of character.
But if we're being honest, maybe not in terms of advancing, but it's kind of how their season's gone from start to finish. So obviously 32 races in now, still winless. And it's the earliest a defending champion has been out under this current format since 2014 in the round of 12. So I was shocked too with their strategy call. There's a caution with, like, I don't know, 25 laps to go or so, maybe 20, 25, whatever. But he was running third and he was competitive. He was closing in on Chase Elliott, Alex Bowman. He had just gotten around Joey Logano and he was competitive. And that's with a car that was wrecked early in the race, or at least had a flat tire. He thought it was wrecked and they had to repair the left front damage. So, you got to put your two-time champion, cup champion, on offense at that point. You can't let him go on defense where tires actually kind of mattered a little bit in the race, and he's just a sitting right. duck. So I don't know what they were thinking and what Adam Stevens was thinking.
I don't either. And it's funny, you know, post-race, Kyle kind of made some veiled comments about the possibility of changes coming for next year on that team.
Wanted to bring that up.
I can't imagine you would put your crew chief out, especially somebody that's a two-time champion and has handled Kyle. I mean, there's a skill involved in handling Kyle, mm-hmm. and especially evil Kyle. And Adam has done it adeptly for ages. And I mean, I know there's obviously frustration, especially after that race, but I just can't imagine putting somebody else on that box. I try to go through the garage and think of anybody else that could sit in that box and be successful with that team, and I don't know if there's anybody else that could do it.
I agree, and you do have to have a certain, like, temperament around you and how you handle yourself and conduct yourself in terms of controlling Kyle, because he needs someone, I think, who kind of tells him what to do. And who won't back down from him. And Adam's been that guy. They've gotten 27 wins together since 2015, and that includes zero this year. So, and two championships. Yeah. So that's pretty impressive. Almost half of Kyle's Cup wins, 27 of 56, have come with Adam Stevens. And we got to remember, there was a, you know, between 2008, 2013, 14, Kyle Busch was going through crew chiefs like no tomorrow. So, yeah.
Mike Underwood.
Pretty much. So, yeah, I'm glad you brought up the changes part, because he did mention, you know, there needed to be changes. He was asked straight up about, will Adam Stevens come back? And he didn't answer it. He's told the reporter, why would you be stupid and ask me that right now? So he was frustrated, obviously, and, you know, rightfully so. He just got eliminated from the playoffs 5 straight years after going to the championship 4. But now for the 18 team, Kyle's in his prime. He's, what, 35? This is a wasted year for him in the 18 team. He's only won one race in the last 56 as well, dating back to last June. So something's going on over there.
Sometimes you have bad luck. I will always defer to one Dale Earnhardt Sr., who... when you get to it, 1987 is probably his greatest year of his career. If not, it's darn close. I mean, they were dominant in that season and walked to a championship. I mean, it wasn't even close. They came back in 1988, and they couldn't find their ass with both hands. I mean, they were terrible in 1988. Yeah, 1987, Dale Earnhardt won 11 races. That's the only time in his career that he won double-digit races. 1988, they won 3. He ended up 3rd in points, which, you know, wasn't terrible, but they were coming off back-to-back championships and hitting on all cylinders. The same thing again happened when you get to 1992, the greatest finish in the championship mm-hmm. in the history of sport. And one of your arguable 3 best drivers in history wasn't a part of it. They had gone from, again, back-to-back championships in 90 and 91, where they won 9 and 4 races. They won one race in 92. And it's just one of those things where... And then turned around and won back-to-back championships in 93 and 94. Yeah. So you had 4 championships in 5 years, and the one year you didn't do it, you were god-awful. I mean, went from 23 and 21 top 10s in a 29-race season to 15. in 92. I mean, it happens sometimes. And it's one of those deals where, yeah, at the moment, you probably think there might need to be changes. And in the modern world that we live in, where we change at the drop of a hat sometimes, it may not be a bad idea to have everybody take a 2-week vacation after Thanksgiving and go as far away from Huntersville, North Carolina as they can get, and come back and all sit down with a blank sheet of paper and talk it out. Because I really feel like, and there's nothing to change on the pit crew.
They're great.
They gain spots every time on pit road this weekend.
Yeah.
I don't think you lose Adam Stevens. What do you got left? A shock specialist and a race engineer? I really don't think those guys are going to make that big of a difference. So as much as I understand his frustration and I understand the comment, I think you'd be silly to do any serious changes with that 18 team for next year.
Yeah, I agree. And the only thing I can think of is Kyle's been very outspoken since the beginning of last year about this aero package and how it kind of takes the driver out of it. And it's all about the car and clean air. And I kind of wonder about that because, you know, most of his success over the last 2 years came at the beginning of the first year of the rules package. And he won 4 out of the first 14 races. But then since then has won 1 out of the last 56 or whatever I said. So yeah. I don't know. It might be the rules package, and if so, then he was probably going to struggle next year too.
Yep. Well, and I don't see us getting a whole lot of practice again either.
No.
And that's another thing that he's complaining about.
Sure.
And I think that I think history plays it out too, that without practice or with practice, they would come out and be mediocre in the first practice session, go in and make changes, and then come out and be on fire in the second one. And I don't have the stats in front of me from this year, but I'm pretty sure every doubleheader we had, they finished much better in the second race than they did in the first race.
Except for Pocono when he got wrecked out, but yes.
But even then, they were going to be the winners.
Correct.
I mean, he'll even tell you, he and Blaney were basically racing for the win, and Blaney dumped him.
They would have been racing for the lead, yeah.
Yeah, so it's... Without practice next year, I'm with you. I think this rules package and no practice, next year is going to be a challenge as well, but... I think he's just got to ride it out until 2022. And then you hate to see him wasting 2 of the prime years of his life in something that's not giving him an opportunity at championship. But when we get to that next new car, I think it's going to be completely different.
At the same time, though, and I don't know how much we should go more in depth on this, but Denny Hamlin's having a career year. He also had one of his career years last year. Martin Truex Jr., he's only won one race this year, but won a bunch last year. Eric Jones, he's been pretty good lately. I know he hasn't won, but when you compare Hamlin to Kyle, there's no comparison over the last year and a half at least, even though Kyle won the championship last year.
I agree. Yeah, it's curious. And and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they change something up and he turns around and kicks butt. But I don't know. I feel like you're gonna end up paying a price if you jostle that team up too much.
I agree because it's going to take, I think, a while for a new crew chief to come in and kind of be the leader that Adam Stevens has been. It's going to take – Kyle might never get that leadership again, I mean, if we're being honest. So, yeah, it'll be an interesting offseason. Give me a one-word answer. Does he win one of the last 4 races and continue his – it would be then 16-year streak of wins in a single – in a year or no?
I'm going to say yes, but – I say that just because I've been picking him all year, and I'm not going to stop picking him. But I mean, I don't feel like they've done anything on mile and a half to make me feel like he's going to do it. So that leaves Martinsville and Phoenix. And I mean, he can definitely win at Phoenix. Martinsville, he's done it, but not with any kind of real consistency. So in all honesty, I think you're going to come down to Phoenix, and he's going to win Phoenix to keep the streak alive.
He says,
and you're going to have the first time of a champion not being the winner of the final race.
He says they're not even close. So we'll have to see what transpires over the next 4 weeks. But Neff, also Eric Almirola, Austin Dillon missed the round of 8. Personally, not surprised by either one of these. I had Dillon out in the first round, Almirola out in the second round. But I think I think the three-team Austin Dillon has to be proud of what they did in the playoffs. They showed real speed in the first round. And then at Vegas, they were top five when they had a power steering failure. They ran okay at Talladega, and then he got wrecked yesterday at the Roval and still had a respectable finish. So no real surprises, right, with Almirola and Dillon?
Yeah, and he was running well. I mean, for a road course for Dillon to run well is a big deal.
Yeah.
And he was running really well on Sunday before that happened. So I'm absolutely, that team, the three team, has got to feel really confident heading into 2021 for sure.
Definitely. So the round of eight, again, no real surprises. You got, I think, your six championship favorites going into this, really two championship favorites. But you got Hamlin, Harvick, Brad Keselowski, Truex, Chase Elliott, Joey Logano. And then you got Alex Bowman and Kurt Busch, who I think are a bit surprising. Now, if I had the 88 car out in the first round and the one car out this round, my final four is still intact. Your champion is out. So I think we need to reassess. I think we need to reassess where we're at and update your final four. Who you got?
For final four? I mean, I got three of the four still alive.
Sure, but your champion's out.
Harvick, Hamlin, and Truex. So we've got to decide who's out. I'm going to go with Logano.
Logano.
Because I think Logano's going to win one of these races in this round.
You got to think one of the Penske cars. I have Keselowski, obviously, in mind. You got to think one of the Penske cars is going to make the final four. I know they didn't last year. And Keselowski's only made it once of the previous 6 years, which was in 2018, 2017.
I haven't felt that confident about Keselowski.
They're off a little bit.
I feel like they've been off compared to the other Penske vehicles.
They had a very mediocre second round, as did Kevin Harvick, but they're allowed to with the playoff points of that, especially Harvick. He still made it in by over a race.
He's already locked into the final four.
Pretty much. He's 47 points up going in. So who do you got winning the championship, though, since you had Kyle?
Yeah, I'm going with Harvick. As much as I think Hamlin is probably going to have more momentum going into Phoenix, it's still Phoenix. And I still feel like if I got to pick somebody to win at Phoenix, I'm taking Harvick. Yeah. Even though he hasn't really shown it there the last 3 years,
mm-hmm.
I mean, he still is really good there.
Sure. And I'm going to stick with Hamlin. My final four of Hamlin, Harvick, Truex, Keselowski is still intact. And again, no, I think the six of the eight, Bowman and Kurt were probably the only two that were a little surprising to get to the final eight. And let's speak about that then. Kurt, obviously, he would have got into the final eight on points anyways with the way the round played out. But going into the round, he was 12th of the 12 cars. So, you know, that's a positive for him. Bowman, you know, they had a terrible summer. We hit it that ad nauseum here on the podcast. But they've really turned it around over the last 7-8 weeks, and I have a sneaky feeling about him. He's going to be good at the mile and a half, especially this weekend at Kansas.
The only thing that could get really interesting is if Bowman figures out a way to get to Phoenix, he's good there. I mean, don't forget when he jumped in the 88 and almost won at that thing as a part-time driver.
Yeah.
That could make things really interesting if you end up having something like that play out. But yeah, I agree. They've shown some flashes at mile and a half tracks, and it wouldn't be a stunner. Just as I don't think it would be a stunner to have Kurt Busch win at Martinsville. I mean, Kurt has shown in the past that he can get around Martinsville well. He's good on flat tracks anyway, and you could see him steal one there. But Truex has been so good at Martinsville the last couple of 3 years that I think it's going to be a challenge for somebody else out of those final eight to beat Truex at Martinsville. He may not win it, but I don't think anybody in the final eight is going to finish ahead of him. Because as I say that, Hamlin has been terrible at Martinsville the last
recently,
couple of times. I mean, especially this year. When they went there in the spring, they were awful. And that was the race that Kyle decided to try his setup, which really didn't work out well.
Yeah, that's Kyle's season in a nutshell right there. Neff, anything else on the Roval for Cup, or do you want to spend a lot of time on this Xfinity race?
Roval for Cup, I want to give a thumbs up to Charlotte Motor Speedway, because after the Xfinity race, the debacle that we're about to talk about, they made some changes, and I don't know what all they were, but did some things to improve drainage just overnight. And that's kind of how SMI rolls. They will spare no expense to make some things work out. Marcus went out and got light stanchions so that they could have lights if it ended up running late. And they did some work. So you had a couple spots where there were still some puddles, but there wasn't a duck pond in multiple places, which there was on Saturday.
Yeah, I agree. And it is interesting, or you know, like you said, thumbs up to them for even attempting that, because there's a lot that goes into, you know, extra drainage systems and all that. So I did see that they put up additional lights throughout the infield, which was much needed Saturday night, as that race went pretty late into the night, especially in rain, which we'll get into here now.
At least that's what I heard.
Sure. Let's get into that race right now, Neff. Xfinity race. Okay. This is going to be fun. Fans wanted rain. They got all the rain racing on Saturday. This has got to be by far the most rain we've ever seen in a NASCAR race and then still compete. The only thing you can compare it to, I think, is 2015 at Mid-Ohio. And that was a shit show. This was, I don't have words to really tell you how not bad, but how.
It was bad.
It was. The first part of the race was terrible.
It was more rain than I've ever seen anywhere. I mean, Formula One races in the rain, and they would not have raced in that. And I've seen that in Formula One races, especially, mm-hmm. I want to say it's San Marino has a spot on the front stretch that it's just notorious for a river of water flowing across it if they get heavy rain. And they won't race in it. They make sure that that flow has dropped down to whatever level they deem. But you just don't get these standing puddles. And, I mean, there were still pictures and videos of people going through these puddles where the splitter, I mean, initially we saw it kind of pushing water to the side. But then we saw full-on waves of water going over the top of cars like they were on the flume ride at Kings Island. I mean, mm-hmm. It was ridiculous. I'm all for racing in rain, and we'll talk about that a little bit more here probably too, that I still think we should run in rain on ovals. But you have to be within the limits of the ability of the rain tires to function. And when you have literally 3 or 4 inches of water on the surface, even the best rain tires in the world cannot wick that much water away to give you traction. And at that point, you have to step back and say, this is not safe. We're going to wait for this to clear through. And, I mean, I know there were post-race discussions about it, and I'm sure that it played into it, but there's getting the race in, and there's putting people in danger, and I felt like we put people in danger on Saturday.
I agree with you completely. And the first part of this race was terrible because a lot of these drivers haven't – none of these drivers – I don't know, maybe Allmendinger, but even he was one of the drivers said over the radio that was very unsafe and that NASCAR just needs to get it in. But none of these drivers have ever competed in any types of rain like this, to my knowledge.
Like I said, I don't think anybody's ever competed in rain like that.
And I guess that's part of the problem, Neff, is, you know, NASCAR is, it's in the, racing is in the entertainment business to a degree, as much as we do or don't like that. NASCAR, I'm sure, you know, this race can be talked about for years. It really will be. And it'll be on highlight packages. And like, oh, we can race in the rain. But it was unsafe. And it was terrible for a while. There was, you couldn't, like you said, when the rain tire doesn't really make a difference. And you still have guys spinning out. And like you said, 4 inches of water on the track. I don't know. And then, like, Brandon Brown, he hit the grass. And I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. He hit the grass, and then the car was gone. You couldn't see it for a couple seconds. So this was very dangerous. Ross Chastain had a lot of sarcasm post-race in the Zoom call, saying he could see clearly, and that was very safe. And obviously, you know, a lot of these guys aren't going to call NASCAR out per se. But I do think the second part of the race was a lot better after the red flag. But my question to you, Neff, is should this race have even been run on Saturday?
I'm okay with it running Saturday, but it probably should have started. Well, let's go down that path later. Initially, should have started at like 1, and then we'd have had the whole thing in before all the monsoon started. But secondly, if you weren't going to start it at 1, it probably should have started about an hour and a half later. And then been red flagged at one point and then picked up again. Because if you watch the IMSA race at night, the IMSA race was okay. But I mean, the surface wasn't that bad.
But they've also got headlights.
What's that?
They've also got headlights, and NASCAR obviously does not.
Well, that's a thumbs down to the facility for not having the light poles in place in the infield. But it was bright enough that you could see. I know I saw some tweets of pictures that it was darker than it looks like on TV.
It was dark.
I
don't know
how that plays. But it should have been run, but there should have been it should have been run at a different time. Mm-hmm. They should not have tried to compete during the initial start and then near the end when it was a real monsoon.
And I texted back and forth with you about this Saturday. The Roval, in my opinion, should never be a cutoff race. And I get all the drama, especially after 2018 in the Cup race. The first year, obviously, the track was in existence with Kyle Larson and Jimmy Johnson, Martin Truex Jr., that final lap. But especially if we're going to race in the rain, I mean, there's a lot on the line here. And you can make an argument that, you know, maybe road courses shouldn't be in the playoffs at all. And obviously for a while they weren't. I would not agree with that. I do think they belong in the playoffs.
There needs to be at least one, but
do agree with that.
I mean, but at this point we have 6. So next year, 2022 or 2023, when we have a dozen road courses, then you're going to have it be a cutoff race. I mean, I'm with you. I like it in the playoffs. I don't know that I necessarily want a super speedway race or a road course race to be a cutoff race. But at the same time, your champion is supposed to be the best at all disciplines. And I think having it be a cutoff race forces guys that are not good road racers to be better road racers.
But if we have conditions like Saturday, and I know we can't really compare
and again,
that.
Saturday shouldn't have happened.
Right.
At least not at the times that we did it. I don't have a problem with running in the rain,
yeah,
but it had to be reasonable rain, not a monsoon.
And I don't think NASCAR will make that mistake again.
Not
that it was. I mean, it was a mistake, but it led to some entertainment. Like I said, NASCAR is an entertainment business. In the end, though, Neff, A.J. Allmendinger and Chase Briscoe were still battling for the victory, and
that's what I heard.
They've done. Oh boy. They were battling for the victory, and obviously Allmendinger is a road course ace. He's very good on road courses, and Briscoe's very good too. In fact, I believe those were our picks from the Roval.
Yes, sir.
Unfortunately for you, Briscoe spun out in a late race restart while leading, and Allmendinger held off, and now he's got 2 wins this year, 6 top fives, 8 top tens, very solid in colleague equipment, and I mean, in my opinion, he's deserving of a full-time ride.
Oh, I think so, too. But it's a matter of, does he want it? Because we had that discussion last year, when AJ won last year, and they were like asking him if he wanted a full-time ride, and he didn't want it. He said he was happy doing part-time stuff and didn't really want to go back to full-time up racing. So if he gets to a situation where, you know, he's in, you know, this type level of equipment that can win a championship, then maybe it's a different story. But, and whether it's Cup or Xfinity, either way. But last year, you know, he was enjoying time at home.
Sure.
And he's married, and he has a beautiful wife, and she loves him. God knows why. And I say that kiddingly. But it's a question I guess we'll get to him in the interview with, because last year he was happy doing what he's doing now, and I don't know if that attitude has changed. He, from a skill standpoint, he absolutely is worth it. It's just a matter of whether he wants to.
Definitely. And obviously got his first one on the in an oval earlier this year at Atlanta. Six top fives. I mean, that he had only five in his previous Xfinity career, which was only like six more races longer than it's been this year with the 10. But he's always a factor at wherever he races with Colleague. And obviously, Colleague, we've talked about the team a lot recently, especially with all the recent success with Haley and Allmendinger. But they're breeding this team to be a force. And as reported on Monday by Sports Business Journal, it looks like they're going to possibly be moving to Cup in 2022, which isn't surprising. I mean, I thought we saw it coming, especially with them, you know, running the 500 this year. And they're going to run all the Speedway races, Chris Rice said, until COVID-19 happens. So, and truly, I think Allmendinger's stock went up a ton when it was announced six road courses on the Cup schedule. But with that said, I mean, obviously there's no big teams right now that are really looking for a driver for the most part. Obviously there's a couple still out there, but with drivers that we believe are destined to go there with Hendrick and Stuart Haas. But regardless, Allmendinger has impressed me a lot this year and the time he's been with Colleague over the past 2 years.
Yep, I agree. I think he's, like I said, I think he's got the skill to run whatever he wants. And it's just a matter of whether he really wants to go back to the full-time grind or not.
So, Neff, you mentioned how you heard Allmendinger and Chase Briscoe battled for the victory.
I didn't get to see it.
Yeah, and I don't want to spend a ton of time on this like we did last week, but I think it warrants another discussion. So, again, the Roval this week, both races were on NBC, and you could tell from the beginning with Saturday's race with how slow the pace was, and rightfully so. They're like 15 seconds off compared to usually what they would be running and in you know, regular conditions with the rain, that it was going to run long. And then we got a 38-minute red flag, and you knew it was going to go to a different channel. It was CNBC. I guess we're talking about money and stocks, but give me your take. This is the second week in a row, fourth time this year. Not a surprise, in my opinion, that it got moved from NBC. But it is very frustrating.
I guess it's not a big surprise since they obviously have a track record of doing it the week before. But, again, this is stemming from the network itself pushing to have these races start so late, then turning around and yanking it off the air and putting it on a secondary channel because of programming commitments. I'm fine if their programming commitment is their national television news, if it's a presidential debate, if it's a normal, you know, news program or something, but it's not. It's local news. And local news gets preempted all the time. And I don't know what the West Coast had again, because, again, West Coast wasn't going to local news, so it was probably paid programming for the Roomba or something. But it was stupid to start the race that late to begin with because of the weather. You could have gotten most of that race in before any really torrential rain had hit. And then you end up pushing it off to CNBC. For those of us that don't necessarily get to be home on a Saturday, I was doing a charity event, so I had it on DVR. I get home, I'm watching, and I'm like, there's no way this is going to get in this time. And sure enough, that's about the time little thing. At least they gave us a heads up
this time. They did give you a heads up
that we were going to switch over, so you had time to go find out where it was on your channel guide. But if you're watching it at 8 o'clock at night, we're in the race had already started, you weren't going to get to see it. So I'm incredibly frustrated at the fact that they're forcing the sanctioning body to start the race so late and then moving the coverage at the end because of other programming and commitments. If you're going to force them to start so late, then you should live with whatever consequences come from it starting so late. And right now, they're not doing that.
It happened Sunday, too. I know they didn't cut away during the race, but they had, I think, just one Victory Lane interview or front stretch interview with Chase Elliott. And then it was time slotted for 6. Then go to local news, you know, for NFL on Sunday night football. But that one interview was all they got, I believe. I might be mistaken on NBC. No, I think so. And then everything else is NBC Sports, which at least was, you know, televised. It was in the TV guide. You knew what you were going to get. But, yeah, it is frustrating to see it again. And I do believe, if I'm not mistaken, Sunday Night Football ran pretty long last night on Sunday night. And they didn't cut away.
Amazing. They didn't switch it over to, you know,
local news. But regardless.
Geographic channel or something so that we could see local news.
Can't say that I'm surprised. Now, for one final thing on the Xfinity race. I think you did get to see this part because it was before the red flag. Riley Herbst, Noah Gragson, their feud continues. They're battling for the lead, and Riley Herbst gave Noah Gragson no time at all. Intentionally spun him. There's no doubt about that. Gragson was furious over the radio, saying all these cuss words that I'm not going to say. You can go look at my Twitter if you want to go look at them. But I think you got to give Herb some credit, because if we flash back to Texas, they were battling for, what, 12th, 13th? Gragson gave Herb no time, bumped him out of the way. Herb was wrecked. I think this is kind of fair. And I know Noah, you know, he told me that day that at Texas that he had no intentions on wrecking the 18, and you know, he stopped in the corner, essentially. Well, I don't know. I think when you piss a lot of drivers off, like let's be honest, Noah has this year, it can come back to bite you.
Yeah, we've had this discussion before, same thing with Ross Chastain. Mm-hmm. He races you hard, he'll rough you up.
Logano.
But Logano, same thing, but he doesn't have a problem if you do it back to him. Logano sometimes gets a little offended, which I think is a little untoward, but yeah, Noah roughs people up, so he's got to expect it to come back. I was a little surprised that Riley didn't give him
any time.
Chance, you know, it's one thing if Riley come up and like giving him a shot, and Noah didn't let him by, which you know Noah wouldn't have done. But I'd have given him a shot, and then let him collect it, and then if he doesn't want to give me the room to let me get by, then I'd have done what Riley did. But Riley got to his back bumper, jacked him up, and never lifted. I mean, and you watched it on a replay. There was no separation ever.
He saw it coming. His bumper
and drove through it. So, if you know that you've done it, you got to expect it. And now, whatever comes out of this, we get to Martinsville. I wouldn't be surprised to see some kind of payback happen again.
I think it's over now. I might be wrong, but they both got.
I don't know about that.
They've both gotten one in on each other.
Pretty big memory.
Sure, but they both got one in on each other. I think it's over. And they were childhood friends. They grew up going to school together in Las Vegas, so it's interesting to see.
I think they roomed together for a year or two.
It's interesting to see, I guess, all the bad blood spill out now. Staying on the Xfinity Series enough, there was a lot of silly season news that came out since we last recorded. Austin Cindric, he's staying in the Xfinity Series full-time next year with Penske before going to Cup full-time in 2022 with the Wood Brothers. So we discussed this a couple weeks ago about Chase Briscoe. I think it's absolutely the smart decision and the right call to keep Cindric down at least one more year.
For Cindric, yes. I think it's the right call for Cindric. I hate it for DiBenedetto because, once again, he's going to have another year of driving for his life.
Sure.
And I wish somebody somewhere would give him a 3-year deal so he can focus on just racing for a while instead of having to stress about, you know, if he tears up cars or something, is this another nail in his coffin and in his career? So I think it's a great call for Cindric. I'm glad to see that Matty D's got a race for another year, but man, it sucks that he's going to spend another year auditioning again.
Okay, I see where you're coming from, but at the same time, I think Penske kind of did DiBenedetto a service because they could have just booted him now, and then he has.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And he has nothing for next year.
I had more than one source that I talked to the week before that said that was a done deal, mm-hmm. that they had already told DiBenedetto he was out. So I don't know what changed. It might have been the public sentiment after Talladega, I don't know, but leading up to that week after Talladega, I had heard they were going to make the announcement that he was out that week. So,
and that I think a lot of the industry thought the same thing. I had heard also from a couple of sources that it was likely he was going to be out of the 21, and at that point, he's got nothing for next year. There's really no competitive rides left in the cup level. But, you know, with that said, and I want to stand the Benedetto now, he needs to he's had a solid year, obviously made the playoffs for the first year, but it's very, very similar to last year. And obviously last year, a little more consistent. But he's got the same amount of top fives with three. One more top 10. He has eight this year compared to seven last. But he's led a lot fewer laps, almost twice fewer laps. Obviously, a lot of that stems from Bristol last year.
Bristol?
Yeah. But sure, he didn't replicate that this year. I know it's hard to do, but I think he needs to prove himself. And I know he's done so every year, and he's fighting for his life. But in order to have a good shot in 22, I think he needs to step up his game, because I have been a little disappointed in the 21 team this year. I expected more.
I was disappointed in their second half. I thought the first half went exactly like I thought it would, and then they had a couple bad runs, and I felt like they shifted into a defensive mode, and I think that bit them the rest of the year. And I felt like he was hitting on all cylinders. I felt like they were knocking on a door of a potential win, and then it just seemed like they dropped back and just started worrying about points, and I think it killed their momentum, and they never got it back. So I'm with you. I would have liked to have seen more, and I think we will see more next year.
Me
I still
too.
Feel like he's got a win coming. I think he's going to be the guy that gets that 100th win for the Wood Brothers. But, man, I hate that he's fighting for a career. But we'll see what seats come available in 2022, because I feel like that four car is going to be opening up anytime soon, and there's a couple others, so.
Unfortunately, though, that's the current climate we're in, obviously, where it's only one-year deals for the most part. And I do think there's going to be a lot of rides available for next, 2022. But unfortunately, Matt, he doesn't have the sponsorship, the funding to back up his performance and his driving ability. So if he can work on that and bring that to a big team, I was talking to a driver earlier today for an upcoming piece this week on Front Stretch. And he's like, it's like hitting the jackpot. If you find yourself in a position where you're able to have funding and not worry about that and go into a team. So,
yeah, absolutely. I think we've told that story on here before. I was talking to a driver when Brian Scott left Petty.
Mm-hmm.
And I messaged him like, hey man, you got a shot at that ride? And he's like, sure, I already talked to him. They said, all I got to do is bring $6 million.
Yeah, good luck. Go find it.
So I was like, yeah. If I had $6 million, I'd be going somewhere else.
Yeah, pocket change.
That's kind of where it's at. If you can bring that level of funding, then teams will give you a ride. But when you're coming out there with, Billy Bob's corner grocery store buying one set of tires for the season, they're not going to be really giving you a shot. Which, again, it infuriates me, because I feel like owners have gotten lazy, and we've talked about that on here before too.
Sure. Also, Neff, I think big news, we talked about Alex Bowman a little bit earlier, but it was finally announced he's the driver of the 48 car replacing Jimmy Johnson next year, as he's retiring in four more races from full-time competition. There was speculation this would happen, so I'm not really surprised. I'm kind of not surprised, but a little intrigued that they kept the 48 number. I know, obviously 24, the 3, the 43 still run. But I thought maybe they'd move away. And then obviously, that opens up another ride, potentially the 88 or the 5 or the 25 or whatever Hendrick wants to run. And I think a lot of people are in the same boat on who they believe is going to go there with Kyle Larson.
Dude, 7 championships. Why would you retire a number that has 7 championships to keep alive a number that's got 7 race wins? I mean, it's the 48 is as ingrained into Hendrick's history as the 5 and the 24.
Sure.
So I don't think there was any chance they would mothball the 48. I'm kind of on board with you that if Larson goes there, I think it's going to either be the 5, or you may see them get crazy with the cheese whiz and change it to a 57. Because that is Larson's number, and there's actually a little bit of history at Hendrick, I think, with a 57 way back as well. So there's there's possibility there. I even threw it out on Twitter that they should get Heinz to be the sponsor. So you got Heinz 57. That would be awesome.
That would be cool.
And I got a like out of Heinz out of that, so that was kind of fun. But yeah, I wasn't surprised to see Bowman's going to move over to that ride. And I feel like, if it's Larson or whoever ends up in the now 88, I think it's going to switch back to the 5 or go to another historic number based on that driver's pedigree.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my point is when it comes to any other sport, and I get, the car numbers belong to the owner, not necessarily the driver, but that 48 car, it's always going to be remembered for Jimmy Johnson. It doesn't matter what Alex Bowman does in it. I mean, if we're being honest,
still run a 43.
Absolutely. And I said that right before I prefaced that, that they still run the 3, the 43, the 24 still out there. And I get that they're not going to change it. And if you look at all their sports.
But the 3 is a little different. And, you get that because they mothballed it for a while. But they brought it back because it's
correct.
Lorenzo and racing.
Right.
I mean, there's a little different legacy to that one. But I mean, when your organization's got 11 championships and 7 of them are out of one number, I don't see how you would mothball that.
Oh, I agree. I get where you're coming from, and I'm not saying that's not realistic or at all. But
and I shouldn't say 11. They have 12 championships because Terry Labonte's got one.
Yeah. But regardless, the 48's always going to remember for Johnson. And I think Ally, they probably want to stay with the 48 since they came on board 2 years ago now. Regardless, that's off topic. Bowman's the driver, and I think it's a good hire, and he's got more pressure now as he, was the driver replacing Dale Jr. Now he's the driver replacing arguably the greatest driver of all time, Jimmie Johnson.
Yeah, he's going from one pressure cooker to another one, which ironically kind of led to a firestorm that came up this week, discussing his anxiety levels in that announcement and things going on around that. So it's he's already kind of let the cat out of the bag on that he's feeling some pressure and anxiety before he's even gotten into the car, which I don't know if that's a good thing or not for him.
Well, I think he actually said yesterday in the Zoom call that the anxiety came from his points position and the potential of rain and maybe not controlling his own destiny, especially if Kyle or whoever else, Clint Bowyer, would have won. Then he would have been racing Logano, and as we saw when Kyle got the lead there, they were separated by 1-2 points, Logano and Bowman. And the announcement of the 48 was actually a distraction and kept his mind away, so in a way it helped him not think about the points. But regardless, like you said, one pressure cooker to another, I think he'll do a good job in that car. And it's good for him, too. He's got a full-time sponsor behind him now.
Yeah, that's a cool deal. And as we've said, he's shown abilities, and it'll be interesting to see how that translates into the 48. But I think that he's proven he's deserving of the ride. I don't have any problem with him getting it, and now it's up to him to perform and hopefully continue on in that ride for years to come.
Two more silly season notes. Thursday, Clint Bowyer announced he was retiring from full-time competition. Moving to the Fox Sports booth with Jeff Gordon and Mike Joy. It was a little surprising whether he elected to retire or Stuart Haas is like, we're putting Briscoe in the 14. I don't know if we'll ever know. But it is surprising because I did think Clint probably had one more year. And as we talked about last 2 weeks ago, I think the better decision probably would be to keep Briscoe down another year and to run him in 2022 when there's a new car.
And that's still assuming it's Briscoe that moves up. I know everybody and their brother is thinking Briscoe's it. I still think Larson's got a shot at the 14. I know that the rumor mill is saying that he's going to be at Hendrick, but he's got a history with Smoke, and I know Smoke has run up a few different comments in the last 6 months that he would like to have Larson in his stuff, so I don't put that by him at all. Either way, I can see that may have been forced on theirs, and it may have been forced on the Fox side too. If Fox came and offered him a big old load of money, because if I understand what I've been told before from former drivers in the booth that have all said they made way more money talking about racing than they did actually racing. So if they came to Boyer and said, here, here's a nice big fat check, and all you got to do is sit in an air-conditioned booth with a jacket on, that may be a lot more comfortable, especially after seeing him flop out of the car on Sunday after the race.
Also at a time where driver salaries are really an all-time low, especially with some of the bigger-name, long-standing drivers in the sport, like Clint Boyer, who would have needed a new contract, at least for another year, who probably wanted a lot of money and might not have gotten that. So although Gene Haas's pockets are pretty deep. But yeah, I'm a little surprised he's retiring. I thought he had at least one more year out of him and then retire when that new car came. But regardless.
Looking forward to him in the booth. Oh, that's going to be
must
a very
see.
Interesting booth.
Must see TV.
Joy and Gordon are about as straight-laced, buttoned up as it gets.
Mm-hmm.
And Boyer is a loose freaking candidate. So it's going to be an interesting mix, but I think they'll play well with each other.
Yeah, I think it's going to be must-see TV, as we saw with the iRacing deals this year. And also, I know you're not the biggest fan of Jamie McMurray's work, but the chemistry those two had on Xfinity races I thought was really good.
Yeah, I honestly think it's going to be fun to watch what he pulls out of Joy. Because Mike Joy is a funny son of a gun, and he's always so buttoned up and professional when he's announcing. And it'll be awesome if Clint kind of brings his sense of humor and his funny side out.
It'll definitely be fun, and I'm excited for that. Also, one more, the Trackhouse Racing team, obviously owned by Justin Marks, new startup team, announced Daniel Suarez will be the driver of the 99 Chevrolet in 2021. Neff, curious to get your take on this. I think it's good for Suarez because this year has not been fun for him after talking to him a couple years ago for a piece. I do think he'll be a little more competitive. It's going to be RCR equipment, it sounds like. And also, Marks got outbid for two charters. One of them was the Denny Hamlin, Michael Jordan one. And the other one would have been, why am I blanking right now?
Levine's.
Yeah, Levine's. For Spire. And so they asked if Spire would lease a third one. So Spire acquired another charger. They leased this one to the 99 team. But it's an interesting move here, given that I know we've talked about it a lot now, but there's a new car coming just 1 year later.
Yeah, that's an odd situation. Although my assumption is when they say they're getting RCR stuff, that they're getting the Germain
you'd think
cars since the charter for Germain went to Hamlin and Jordan. They're obviously not going to be running Chevrolets, and yes, I know the majority of the car is exactly the same, but it's still, you're not going to get Childress cars under Toyota bodies, so
right. My
guess is that's probably a means of getting more life out of those, plus they'll be able to probably get the whatever chassis get mileaged out from RCR at the end of this year and the beginning of next year as well. So it's cool that they've got that strategic alliance. It is still going to be a challenge. I mean, it's fun to talk about and think that he'll be faster, but yeah, it's been tough with Gaunt Brothers, but Gaunt Brothers at least have a history and they've been mm-hmm. at this for a while. You're talking about some dirt racers that occasionally do some one-off sports car racing or road course racing. So it's going to be a tough road to hoe. But it's, again, like you said, it's great to see people coming in.
Especially
but
new.
I'm with you. It's an odd decision to start up a race team at the cup level 1 year before they're going to obsolete all the cars they're going to be putting on the track. It's almost like people that are starting up new businesses right now after we're just now coming out of COVID. We don't know how long COVID's going to keep hanging on. It's a daunting task, and I wish them the best. It's great getting new blood in this sport. We've talked about it before. Jack Roush, Rick Hendrick, Roger Penske, Richard Childress, they're old.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be going away. And you can have all the contingency and succession plans in place you want. The personalities are different. And they may not have the same drive, desire, or pocketbooks to keep the things going that those guys did. And having new owners and new blood in the sport is going to help keep it alive and keep it growing.
Absolutely. Totally agree with you on that. And like you said, fresh, new, young blood to the sport from the team ownership standpoint, along with Spire, you know, from a couple years ago, young team owners, Michael Jordan, Denny Hamlin, obviously young, you know, younger than the majority. Tony Stewart, too. I mean, it's not all bad. I mean, it's in terms of the age on of some of the owners. But it's definitely good to see new owners to the sport at a time where it, like you just mentioned, coming off COVID and still in the midst of COVID, we don't know when that's going to end. It's kind of surprising to see new team owners enter the sport right now.
That's actually funny. You know, we're sitting here talking about there being 6 road courses next year. That's making a bold assumption that Watkins Glen and Sonoma run next year, because we've already got events in 2021 getting canceled.
Mm-hmm.
And there's discussion that a vaccine may roll out by, you know, February or March, but it's not going to be widely available to the public until probably August or September of next year.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you've still got California and New York shut down, 2 of your 6 road courses just went out the window. So,
right.
You know, you don't know what's going to go with that. So, yeah, it's a bold move for sure coming into it, but I like the aspect of it being a racer. That's the part I like to see, is guys that are actual racers and not businessmen coming into this thing, because hopefully that will put some different voices and different minds into the RTA, and we'll hopefully start going down some different paths with the ownership group than we currently go down.
Absolutely. All right, now, well, we got 3 races this weekend at Kansas Speedway. The Truck Series, they start their next round. All the series start their next round of the playoffs this weekend.
And they're all at 8 now.
They are all at 8. So, obviously, 2 guys were eliminated from the Trucks playoffs. But who you got winning at Kansas? And is it a playoff driver clinching a spot to Phoenix?
I think it is. As much as I want to go Crafton, I'm going to go Enfinger. I feel like Enfinger has refound their focus and got their momentum back. And I think you're going to see Enfinger grab a win.
It's a solid pick. I'm going to go Zane Smith. He got a new contract for 2021 to remain at GMS Racing in the Truck Series. He was my pre-playoffs championship pick. I got Zane Smith getting to Phoenix by winning at Kansas. Now, if you want me to start off for the Xfinity Series race?
Please. That'll only be fair.
Cool. So, it kind of seems like redemption's going to happen. You know, obviously they raced there earlier this year, and Austin Cindric dominated, only for Harrison Burton to get by late, only for Brandon Jones to pass them both on a late race restart. But the redemption, I think, is going to happen from last fall, when, if you remember, Chase Briscoe was only, 10-12 laps away to getting to the championship 4, and then Garrett Smithley, unfortunately, blocked, caused a big wreck. We talked about that then, between him and Christopher Bell. And unfortunately for Briscoe, missed the round of the championship race at then Homestead. What I'm trying to get to, Chase Briscoe's winning this race and locking himself into Phoenix.
I don't blame you on that pick at all. I was going to go down that road, but I will jump onto our boy, Justin Allgaier. He has, as we've talked, he was struggling, doubting his abilities, and he has come out guns a-blazing now the playoffs have gotten here. And I think you're going to see Allgaier put it in victory lane in Kansas.
Solid pick. I'll give you the first pick for the Cup race on Sunday.
Well, do you want Harvick or Hamlin? I think I'm going to take Hamlin, so you can have Harvick.
Cool. Well, they've both been really good there recently. I was going to go Harvick, so I'm glad you went Hamlin. but yeah, either or, they're both going to be in Phoenix more than likely. So one of them will probably clinch their spot this weekend for
and
Phoenix.
And the other one next weekend.
Texas. Harvick's always good there, so yes, probably. Neff, any final words before we get to our conversation with Allmendinger?
Nah, it was... Roval was entertaining. Still an angry, bitter man about Indianapolis losing the Oval, but I guess I'm going to get over it. But I applaud the folks at Charlotte. It's been an experiment. It's been a successful experiment, but it still has growing pains. And I love the fact that Marcus and the team there will never stop trying to improve their product. And seeing them go through the effort they did on Saturday night to make the course better on Sunday was awesome. The only thing I hope we learned out of watching that action at Charlotte is that they should completely paint the inside of the dog leg in Phoenix so that we stop having people driving through the damn infield at Phoenix.
Yes, that would be interesting. And I'm sure the winner from Saturday's race has a lot to say. So let's get to our conversation with A.J. Allmendinger. All right, AJ, you started 22nd on Saturday, obviously got the victory in the rain. I know a lot happened, but overall, just take us through your race.
I don't even know where to start, man. starting 22nd, I guess we'll start there. Yeah. The first few laps in the dry, I thought the car was okay. I felt like if it stayed dry, we were going to have to keep working on it, make it a little bit better, but... from there it wasn't bad. And then once the rain hit, it was just a bit of survival and trying to play the strategy out to get to the front. We had a lot of chaos to get there, a windshield wiper not working, falling off, et cetera, not being able to see most of the time. It was just a chaotic race. At times I didn't really think we should be running. But once we got to the final stage, at that point as the whole, we've all went through so much to get to the final stage, and I completely understood the decision. It's a playoff cutoff race. You got guys that are going for championships and trying to make it to the next round, Ross Chastain, my teammate, being one of them. So we had to get the race in, and NASCAR did a great job trying to at least do everything they could when the caution came out to try to minimize the puddling, which – we saw the weather. It was tough to do. So they did all they could to make sure we at least were able to race on the racetrack. And at times, especially at the end of the race, there's just conditions that you just got to survive in. And fortunately, we were the best ones to do that.
I'm curious, AJ. Being from the Midwest, we dealt with snow and things like that in our life, and we saw black ice. When you're out there and it first really turned into a deluge, could you tell where the puddles were before you hit them the first time, or did you just kind of have to learn that as the monsoon went on?
For the most part, you just kind of had to learn it. There were certain times that, I got fortunate. The right when the first big rain hit, near the end of the first stage, when Ross spun into turn five, I was about 10 car lengths behind him. I could see the puddle already form up, and I started checking up right as he hit it. So there was times I could see a little bit of it, but yeah, it was just going off of, okay, feeling it out and picking and choosing, okay, what are the worst spots on the racetrack? And as the rain kept getting worse, okay, what are the areas that I just don't even challenge? I just try to survive every lap in. And then the other parts of the racetrack, that's the parts of the racetrack I can try to make up time on. And that's just how I played it. And turn one was especially bad, as we saw a lot of cars spin there. I spun once. So I did a 360 right in turn one. It was puddling really bad there. Turn eight up onto to the NASCAR banking, turn one there was pretty bad. Turn three, it was just a small spot where you saw a lot of those cars spinning. You had to be careful.
Right.
And then the last chicane was really bad. So, yeah, it was just trying to pick the spots, that knowing what was bad, and attacking the rest of the racetrack when I could.
AJ, you've obviously competed in many different racing series over your career, and in the rain, but have you competed in anything like we saw on Saturday?
The only race that came to mind was Rolex 2019. Not the whole time, but the last, I'd say about, 6 to 8 hours of that race, the rain got really bad, and I was in the car for a good portion of that, and same deal. Just puddling really bad. You're just hydroplaning everywhere and trying to survive. I remember, under yellow, just behind the pace car, about crashed several times during Rolex. Just the weather was really bad. So that was about the only race that I could go back and lean on. There was times that I was frustrated and just unhappy about racing in it, but just really more importantly, not being able to see. The restarts from anything from third or fourth row on back was just chaotic. You just saw blinking red lights. That's all you could see. Just hope they were gone when you got there. At the end of the day, the conditions are the same for everybody. So you just got to try to survive and make the best of it.
Right on. Now, we've,
We heard you mention you had a problem with the windshield wiper, and we've had wipers on these cars for a little while now, and I don't ever remember seeing them fail as much as they did on Saturday. Was that a deal where you had more speed on the banking than you had any other time with these wipers, and that caused a problem, or why do you think the wipers were failing?
I don't know, because, I mean, we ran them at Road America, and you're carrying a ton of speed at Road America down the front and back straightaway, even in the wet. So, and during the race this year, there was no issue. It worked great. So,
right.
I don't have a good answer for you on it of why. And at the end of the day, there was times I was like, they were like, well, if you want to come in and fix it, I'm like, I can't see anyway. So, it's raining so hard and there's so much spray from all the cars. I'm like, it doesn't really matter. Just, let me complain and I'll get over it. Like, it's just, that was it.
That's good. You mentioned this a few times over the radio and just a little bit ago. You were kind of frustrated at times, thought maybe NASCAR should have stopped the race. Did you find it, was it safe or not at all?
Well, I mean, we saw a lot of cars wreck. I mean, it definitely was tricky conditions. I haven't raced a lot in the rain over my career. Somehow in Champ Car and everything that I did, I kind of half avoided the rain. It never really had it where I had a ton of rain racing in experience. And growing up in California and karting, I didn't even run a lot in the rain. So, yeah, I mean, it just, when it starts to puddle, like just monsoon puddle where you're just hydroplaning, it's no different than being on the road and you're hydroplaning. You know, that's when it becomes a little bit dangerous. So I thought early in the race, maybe we could have taken a chance to stop the race, which we did. We red flagged it where they tried to at least get the puddles out. But, I mean, looking at the weather, and I had to do the broadcast on NBCSN for the IMSA race for NBC Sports. The rain didn't stop, really. I mean, it wasn't getting any better. So there's a point where you look at the weather and say, okay, we're probably going to have to just race in this anyway. Some of it, and I have a twisted, warped way of thinking sometimes in my head. It works for me, and sometimes it works against me. It's like I just needed to complain just to have Chris be like, all right, man, well, if you want to bring it in, you don't feel it's too safe, if you feel it's too dangerous out there, just bring it in, man. I just want you to be safe. Then in my mind, I'm like, well, screw that. Are you calling me a wimp? No. Now I'm going to drive the wheels off the thing. So it's like just self-motivation sometimes, which doesn't sound great on the radio. And honestly, to live it like that every day is not the best thing in life. But, hey, it's sometimes what I do to myself. So.
Chris Rice, sports psychologist, another name to go on his business cards.
No, don't tell him that. He's already got a big enough head. Like he's Mr. Motivation. Don't tell him that, please.
Right on. I've been running this thing for a long time, and I've always tried to understand and argued about the fact that I don't see why we can't race on ovals in the rain. After going through the high banking at Charlotte, do you think they could race that track in the rain as an oval?
I mean, you could, like you can do anything, right? Like, now, does it make great TV? I don't, like, racing ovals in the wet to me is not the best thing in the world. Could you do it? Maybe. But also, you got to really think about, with rain tires, if you're just pounding them around the oval like that constantly, you're just going to shred tires, even in the wet. Like, you're going to abuse rain tires that hard on the banking, running those consistently lap after lap. And, we're drivers, so we're not very smart sometimes. So you're going to carry a lot of speed around the oval, and you're going to have big wrecks. And I just, like, that's something that I've never thought would be great racing, is oval racing in the wet. Now, I always thought NASCAR should race in the rain on the road courses from when I was a kid to now. Like, yes, you should race on a road course in the wet. That's a part of racing. It's a part of nature and how it works. But on the ovals, can you? Sure. Should we? I really don't think so.
Right on. Now, moving on to this season, AJ, you got 2 wins, 6 top 5s, 8 top 10s with colleague. Obviously only 10 starts. So, seems like you're having a lot of fun. Have you ever had this much fun in NASCAR like you are this year with colleague?
I mean, I'm truly enjoying it for sure. I spent to be quite honest, I almost feel like my whole career I was always like scrapping and trying to hang on. And some of that was my own doing, right? Like, I'll never hide from my past. Like, I made my own mistakes as well. But, you know, my first couple years with Red Bull, I didn't belong in the Cup Series. They just threw me in it. We were with a brand new team. Toyota was a brand new manufacturer. So I spent my first 2 years, like, just trying to survive. And I felt like just as I was getting it, they let me go for Scott Speed. And so then I went to Petty. And, like, at that point, my first year, I was racing for free, basically giving all my money back, just trying to keep the car going because I was the fourth car. Then I got in the 43, and it's the same deal. Like, Rays, we really started having momentum. Greg Irwin became my crew chief. We just missed making the playoffs when it was only 12 cars, and I think we missed it by, like, 10 points going into the playoffs. The sponsor Best Buy was leaving. Like, so, like, I got with Penske, and then that was my own doing. Like, I messed that up. And then once I got with JTG, that was a smaller team. We were always just trying to find some way to get better. So, you know, the word fun to me is relative because, like, sure, it's fun when you're winning. That's Roger Penske always told me when I ran the Indy 500 with him, I said, man, Roger, this is going to be fun. I'm going to enjoy this. He said, you know what's fun, AJ? Winning. That's what's fun. I said, yeah, I got you, boss. I completely agree. You got like 19 Indy 500s. I get you. So, yeah, it's always great when you can go be competitive, and that's what's – with college racing, what I more enjoy is, A, we're in it together. So, yeah, the ultimate goal is to win, but we know if we don't win, okay, let's go work on it. There's no pointing fingers, pointing blame at each other, and, you know, we're just going out there continually trying to make the organization better. And if you really think about it, I mean, they're in their fifth, maybe sixth year now, and – before Daytona last year, there were zero wins. And since Ross won that race, I mean, we have seven wins as a company. And that's pretty special mm-hmm. for a company that's only been around for 5 years. So I love the energy. It starts with Matt Collin, Chris Rice, all the men and women at the team. Just kind of carries on. So, yeah, I love being a part of it. I love trying to grow the team as a family and move it forward. And hopefully I'm making a difference for them.
I was going to kind of follow up with that. That was kind of where my question was going to go. You're obviously, and I don't want to call you old, but you're the senior driver in the ranking as far as at least experience over there at college. How satisfying has it been to see, as you said, an organization that didn't have a win before this year, and your input along with the input of the other drivers and everybody else over there has elevated them to a level where they're now going Cup racing in another year?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I guess you'd have to ask Matt and Chris that question to a certain degree. I mean, I just know that I try to go do my best, and I truly care about the team. They make me feel important, and I really enjoy that. And whether I'm in the race car or just sitting at home watching on TV, I'm constantly texting Matt and Chris, like, this is what I see. Okay, this is where we're good. This is where we're getting beat. Anything that I – input that I can give them, I hope makes a difference. And at the end of the day, of course, I want to win races anytime I'm in the race car for them, but I just want to make the team better. And I really hope Ross or Justin win a championship this year. I believe that they can, and I just want to be a part of that. So, yeah, it's fun to see the growth of the team, to have a lot of success in just a 16-month period. Is really cool to go from zero wins to seven in that time period. But yeah, I really want to just make them better. And I just hope that they think I am, and that I'm just a small part of it, really.
Definitely. It seems like there's a cool, unique relationship between the three, and it's been fun to watch. AJ, got a few more for you. You mentioned a few times this season, including when I talked to you in June, you'd consider the thought of going full-time racing in Xfinity with colleagues should you get that opportunity. Have there been any discussions about going full-time next year?
I mean, they're right now trying to figure out what the outlook of the team looks like next year with Ross moving to Cup, which is fantastic. It shows that college racing can put young drivers in the cars and help elevate them to the next level. And I truly believe with what Ross has done this year in that 10 car, I mean, that's the reason Chip Ganassi was still wanting him in his race car in the 42 car for next season. So that's great to show what college racing can help do for young guys. So I don't have a great answer on what next year looks like. I do know I'll be back with college racing in one way or another, running Xfinity, whether that's more races than it is this year. I hope so. If it's full time, I'd be okay with that as well. But, you know, be quite honest, I have the best of both worlds. I truly love working for NBC and NBC Sports and covering anything that they want me to cover. And this year it's been the IMSA WeatherTech Championship for TV. So, yeah, I mean, I younger me, I was always like, okay, what's next? Like, okay, you know, I got to always focus on the future. I don't even really live in now. It's like, okay, I got to – everything was just trying to hang on for the next season to make sure I'm in the car. Right now, I don't have to worry about that. I just enjoy living day by day. And, you know, when we get a chance to win races like we did on Saturday, really enjoying it because you never know if it's going to happen again.
Now, if you got a final question?
That's a true statement there. One last one for me, Justin. You mentioned that you're doing the TV thing. You've been a racer your whole life. Did you ever have aspirations to get in TV, or did that just kind of fall into your lap? And how much fun are you having doing that?
I wouldn't say I had aspirations, but I love motorsports. I mean, I'm a true race fan before I'm even a race car driver. I love all forms of racing. So talking about it on TV, it's a fun scenario. It started with Race Hub with Fox Sports when they had me start coming on like once a week and doing that. I was like, man, I do enjoy this. And then just got the fortunate chance at the end of 2018 that NBC Sports came to me and said, hey, you know, we'd like you to be a part of the team. So I love doing it. I love being able to try to talk to the fans and tell them from my point of view what I'm seeing, what the drivers are going through. I just continue to enjoy that. And as I said, it's really worked out to have the best of both worlds. I still get to race and I get to talk about it as well.
AG, we'll get you out here on this one. It's a fan question. It comes in from Jeff Cox, WGXA. He's a meteorologist out of the Atlanta area. He wants to know, you kind of answered this, but are there any discussions in a return to Cup now that there are 6 road courses on the schedule?
I mean, I haven't had any real discussions with any specific team. I mean, Dustin, you guys know. I mean, if you look at the race teams right now, I mean, they're pretty full, right? Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of quality rides out there anyway. It's not something that I just want to go road course racing just to do it. I want to be in a car that has the opportunity at least to contend, to run up front and go out there. So any specific talks with teams? No, not really. You know, I mean, I won't hide the fact that we've talked at college racing. They're like, okay, you know, if they want to do some races next year, I'd love to do the road course races. They have the affiliation with RCR and ECR Motors, so there's an opportunity if that were to work out. But, you know, any real talks right now, no. But I love what NASCAR's doing with the schedule. I think 5 or 6 road course races is the right mix. I mean, heck, doing a dirt race at Bristol, that's going to be fun to watch. I just like that NASCAR's trying new things, and that's what I think that the sport needs.
Definitely. Well, AJ, always appreciate your time, and again, congrats on the win this past weekend at the Roble.
Well, thank you, guys. Anytime.
All right, y'all. There you have it. Really fun conversation there with AJ Allmendinger, and I really think he could have a lot of success should he go full-time racing next year with Colleague Racing. But as you heard, he'll return to the team to some capacity in 2021, which I truly believe is good news for both him and the team, as he's won 20% of the races he's competed in this year, and he's got 3 for the team now, dating back to last year's Roble. And man, I don't know what more we can say about rain racing, but it was something over the weekend. The Xfinity race was sloppy, bad, entertaining, and good, really all at the same time. But I agree with AJ that we should leave the rain racing to the road courses and not move it on to the ovals. And yes, I am looking at you, Neff, as he's obviously been in favor of moving it to the ovals. That's it for this week's show. As always, thanks for tuning in, and please make sure to leave a rating and review, which helps us move up the charts and possibly get some funding for this podcast, additional funding. But until next week's show, where we review Kansas, we out.